We're doing a special episode of Slightly Offensive out of America Fest in Phoenix, Arizona. The energy is high. I'm not, because that would be dumb to be high at work. Are you high?
Well, I'm here with not Glenn Beck, and I'm excited to be here.
Call me Ben Gleck.
Ben Gleck. This is the highlight of my career. I love the Blaze Studio booth. It's so appropriate for Slightly Offensive right now because, I mean, the aesthetic, everything is amazing.
Let's just bring people into the picture here. So, obviously, being a multi-million dollar company and, you know, having multiple crew and everything, we only wanted to bring the best visual aesthetic, sound quality, and video quality that money could buy. And I got to tell you, I got to say this, you're impressed and you're hard to impress.
I mean, I was shocked when I walked up here. I mean, we have Fox Nation is over there. We have Real America's Voice.
Oh, with their LCD screens and their lights. What is this? 2040?
This is like what it takes. You got a couple cameras here with some JQ lights, and you have the best host in the United States of America.
Ladies and gentlemen, Drew Hernandez is joining me in the chat, in the studio. We have a wonderful Kayla directing, Savannah producing. Brandon's here as well, assisting. Drew Hernandez, obviously it's been a wild ride. You've been blown up. You've been everywhere because you testified at Kyle Rittenhouse trial. Let's talk about that. So what was your experience? Like, bring us into that. How did they contact you and what's been the aftermath?
Well, I think the number one revelation that has surprised people is that Kyle Rittenhouse really loves big booty chicks. But aside from that little factoid that came out, the trial was, it was surreal. It was surreal, man. I mean, really, you and I both know dealing with deep state, dealing with these, you know, these shadow government type figures that come through the form of the so-called justice system. We see it unfolding. We watch it on TV. We see these, you know, these so-called trials that end up just being like political smear pieces on people. I think for me personally, bro, like being involved directly with that, because we know like the psyops that were ran using Kyle, painting him to be a white supremacist. I mean, then candidate President Joe Biden, now President Joe Biden, using him as the poster child of white supremacy that started as a little narrative that Antifa started on Twitter. It got that far. So like dealing with these like deep state type of narratives and being in the middle of it was really surreal for me, because it's one thing when we're sitting back and we're commentating on our shows and we're talking about it and this and that, but actually being like in it was pretty interesting. It was pretty surreal.
Yeah, I spoke to Kyle's defense team. People don't realize this, is that, you know, obviously witnesses can sort of be bad or good. I mean, you don't really know what's going to happen. You just hope for honesty and you hope that the testimony works in your favor. But they actually said they were really grateful for your testimony. Like, right, they're cheering for you. People can hear it. The crowd loves you. They're all on your side.
By the way, that was Savannah pushing the button. That was a fake cheer.
Yeah, but no. But I'll say, like, it is crazy though, because it's like, you know, you and I have been friends. People know this. We bring it up, but if it's their first time watching, I was on your podcast. Was the first time I ever did a podcast. We talked about space aliens and stuff. It was very weird. But also, it's like from that to this to actually influencing a real world campaign that meant so much. I mean, what do you think about that? Like, how it went from talking about aliens in a broom closet to then like being on a world stage and giving a testimony that changes the course of not only a young man's life, but of the Second Amendment and of all future trials in our country.
Well, like I said, man, it's like, it's surreal when you get involved with media, right? And it's one thing when you're listening to commentators, like we listen to our favorite people talking about fake news and these fake news media narratives and all these things that are like manipulating the minds of millions of people. But like, and you know this as well, when you're on the ground, when you're reporting this stuff, when you're seeing it in real time, when you're engaging it in real time, and then like, you're posting on Twitter what's happening right in front of you, and then you refresh your feed and CNN comes out and says the complete opposite. Like, you've experienced this too, right? And you're just kind of like, I'm like dealing with this head on. Like, it's different than just watching it and talking about it. But I think people need to understand the real gravity of what we're dealing with here. And I think it was necessary. I really just wanted, and you knew this, dude. I had so much body cam footage of what happened that night that the jury didn't have. I gave it to the prosecution. I gave it to the state, to the defense as well. So, I mean, I just wanted them to have the full picture, you know? And that's why the stupid binger was trying to accuse me of being biased and manipulating footage.
Well, you did say apparently.
Yeah. I had to teach him what apparently meant.
Yeah, well, he didn't know a lot of things. He also didn't know that you should point a gun at a crowd, which is also pretty crazy. Dude, look, that's what I want to say. From being in the courtroom, now that now it's after, it's concluded, you can say some things, give some comments.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Binger? I mean, like, people are cheering. You're so excited to hear your
thoughts. I just think Binger was like, I think he wasn't, he had no idea who he was dealing with. Like, he didn't know that I do this professionally for, I argue with people, like, on live television. That's my career. That's what I do. And I'm very good at it, you know? I don't think he really understood who he was dealing with and what I was capable of doing with the evidence that I had in hand. You know what I mean? So it's like, he was very foolish. There were, in my opinion, there were different things he probably could have done to get away from my testimony and the footage, but he decided to argue with me, and that just didn't go well with him because I had to teach him very basic elementary words live on TV in front of the entire world.
Yeah, and you crushed it. And you know, they came after you. They tried so hard to discredit you. It just didn't work. And obviously you've been able to talk to Kyle since then, I'm sure. You've been able to catch up with him. What's that been like?
Yeah, I mean, I called Kyle on Thanksgiving. We got to talk and it was awesome. He's very thankful. You know, he's very thankful for not just myself, but all the other journalists that were on the ground that night. That's why it's so important. I mean, people have made the point that this was like corporate media versus independent, not even media.
I never thought about it like that, but you're right.
Not even independent media. Like,
I'm not technically independent.
Independent journalists.
Yeah.
Like just dudes on the ground that were there recording on a phone. Like, that's like the
gravity. I remind everyone of that.
Right? Like, that's
the
gravity.
All the footage that has been captured from every riot was mostly shot on like phones with busted, cracked screens. Like, this is my screen. It's completely cracked. And I have Gary Franchi shirtless from Next News Network eating fries. This is the kind of stuff that we filmed with. I mean, really, and we had our names. We changed each other's names. So if you call, I mean, it would come up. Like, I have James Franco and Tina Fey, and everyone's got these pseudonyms. But like, to show people, like, on busted phones, it took down the narratives of the establishment government and billion-dollar corporate networks. It's crazy.
Budgets that have major power, you know? So I think that's a huge story that needs to be told, you know, because it that is what we were all up against. I mean, aside from the trial, like leading into the trial, like that's what these fake news media cartel, you know, corporations were trying to pump into the minds of. Dude, there were people calling me, bro, after the testimony, like my friends and my family saying like, I had no idea that Kyle didn't shoot black people. It's like, well, because he didn't. There's not a single black person in Chicago, in Kenosha, that Kyle Rittenhouse shot.
Well, he didn't kill anyone in Chicago.
He killed a convicted pedophile that was chasing him from behind. And like, nobody wants to talk about that because that's the absolute truth. But we can't say pedophile, right? We can't. Nobody wants to talk about convicted pedophiles that are like going after children getting shot because they were going after him from behind, which is very concerning.
Yeah,
but that's what Kyle did. That's the first thing that led to that. And Joseph Rosenbaum was not a saint. He was not this good little guy, this good little person. He was a threat to the community.
Yeah, and Huber too. Like, nobody talks about this stuff. Like, I was thinking about the other day. I was like, the amount of guns I saw and the amount of people that had weapons. Like, I love when they say, like, the narrative is Kyle shot a bunch of black people at a racial justice march. And I was like, bro.
And then Joseph Rosenbaum's live on camera. We have the footage. He's saying, shoot me, N-word. And then like even the black people around were kind of like, wait, what? He's on our side?
It's like this white guy. like, I was like, you know, I've thought of wise things to do at protests. Using the N-word at a BLM riot, probably not on my top priority.
Not at all.
But it's cool. At the end of all of this, I know we're really happy. I know that you and I got the chance to speak with Kyle on stage. And if people want to watch that, they can probably go back on the archives. We'll probably post it, some clips of it. But if you guys want to see me and Drew speak with Kyle, we have that panel that we're doing with Pasovic. And also with – who else is on that?
Pasovic, you, me. I heard Charlie's going to be on it now too.
Oh, and obviously Kyle. And Charlie and Kyle. Well,
yeah.
Charlie Kirk, he did the best work in Kenosha. Congratulations.
Hey, well, we're here now, so you can't get rid of us. Just these two losers from SoCal that are now here in your TVs, in your homes. So
yeah, in your TVs and on your iPhones. Anyway, Drew Hernandez, where can people find you? Where can they follow you?
As you follow me on Twitter, Drew H Live. Watch my YouTube show, Drew Hernandez, and get her all the same, Drew H Live, Drew Hernandez Live.
Thanks for coming back on the show. Oh, whoa.
This is very awkward, just for the record.
No, thank you so much for coming on.
Love you, bro.
What an amazing interview. And obviously, we're here at the conference, and I trust the only pairs of boxer briefs for my travel suitcase. Yes, I'm wearing them right now, under tack boxers. Not only because they're extremely comfortable, they look good, and they also wick away any type of moisture. But most importantly, I'm sitting here for long hours. I don't want something that rides up. I don't want something that feels, you know, like it's bunching up where it shouldn't. I want something that protects me. And that's why I trust them every single day, and I'm wearing them, and I have them for the rest of the trip. Now, obviously, beyond that, some amazing things about the company is that they are Battle Forces tested. It's an American company that supports your values, that supports what you do, and of course, when you buy these pairs, you end up saving a lot more than the competition. And they're not only the same quality, but they're even better quality, in my opinion. I like them a lot. They have a quick release fly, so whenever you need to, you know, get it out, it comes out very quickly to go pee or whatever you need. But also, I want to say this, beyond all of that, you know, I bought these for friends, and everyone knows the same thing. They don't wear down when they're in the washer. They don't have any problems with rips or holes. It's high quality. Anyways, go to getundertack.com. That's GETUNDERTAC.com. Use promo code OFFENSIVE20 right now to get 20% off your order. So go to getundertack.com, GETUNDERTAC.com, promo code OFFENSIVE20. That's OFFENSIVE20. Get 20% off and buy the best boxers in America today. Some call him fabulous. Other people call him the street demon, as he's known for street interviews and also amazing commentary. You can't miss him because his videos are everywhere, blowing up, going viral around the internet. Gen Z's latest TikTok celebrity with only 3 videos. James Klug, welcome to the show.
Elijah, thanks for having me, man. Really appreciate it. It's 4 videos, by the way.
We're moving up. How many followers do you have right now?
We just hit 30,000, and you know, we're going to the moon with this, man. It's actually super effective. It's kind of shocking how effective TikTok really is, even driving traffic to any other videos. But man, we think the people on Twitter are aggressive when it comes to the political world. You see these comments on TikTok, these Gen Z kids, stuff like that, they're literally pulling no punches. They're super, super passionate. And I'm actually getting a lot of conservatives that are seeing the videos and agreeing with certain points. Pretty cool.
Yeah, you know what? Let's talk about that, though, because it's really interesting that I think like boomers, Gen X, and millennials love to roast TikTok. It's like, oh, it's degenerate. It's Chinese propaganda. All true. Unfortunately, that's where Gen Z is. Like, that's not even just Gen Z, whatever the next one is, Gamma, I don't know what it is. But the next gens, all the young people are there. That's where they're consuming information. And if we're not consistently taking our information to the next generation where they're consuming it, we're going to lose them. That's like basically what radio did, is it left the whole Gen X and millennials out of it, and we ended up in the place we're at.
Dude, it's so spot on. So, okay, first of all, obviously, TikTok is not my number one thing. We're kind of joking when it comes to like me going up there. But
everybody
hey,
knows, right? It's funny.
For sure. But you're so right about that when it comes to actual platforms that we might mock, right? Let's say you start off on Twitter, or maybe you're doing YouTube or something like that, and you mock these videos on TikTok because maybe we're not into it. Just because people that are, 25, 35, something like that, aren't into TikTok doesn't mean that it's not absolutely blowing up. This is where the front lines are for these college students. You look at, you go to a college campus, you see kids scrolling through their phones. Yeah, sure. Sometimes they're scrolling through Instagram and stuff like that. Most of the time, you'll see them just scrolling through TikTok. That's where this frontline battleground is starting. And it's actually birthed this like huge, basically, political battle online. And there's a decent movement of conservatives, young conservatives, that are very effective on these platforms. So it's stuff that we can't ignore. I used to make fun of TikTok all the time and some
you
of these platforms.
You still can and use it.
And I still do, and I still will, right? Obviously. But I definitely don't ignore how effective it is anymore, because it really is. Like I said, that is where that frontline battle is happening. And these people are ruthless, and they're passionate. And they're also, and this isn't kind of where we used to be a few years ago when we used to go to protests. People would have maybe, we used to think that they might have radical opinions or something like that, but they used to be pretty fair with you. Now it's insane opposing sides where they don't see in the middle, they don't see like eye to eye on practically anything. So it's polar opposite sides, right and left, that are just duking it out online. It's pretty insane, actually.
So here's what worries me, though, about it, is that like I just put up a video using one of their sounds from TikTok, basically making fun of Dr. Fauci. It wasn't even crazy. And then it got deleted for bullying and harassment. Like, I don't know, because obviously Dr. Fauci is science, so I bullied science, which is kind of cool. It's kind of based. But also, it brings this up of like, you know, even though there's so much potential use, the acceptance of that level of censorship, where you have a public figure, you're not even spreading misinformation. And when I appealed it, they said that I had violated laws, you know, like laws, legal laws, which are of who, of where? right? And this is scary. And so it's like, yeah, this has great potential for good, but it does scare me that the next generation, we thought we understood censorship, where they get information, it's even trickier. Because if you say anything slightly true about the police state, about against Dr. Fauci, against communism, against anything, they'll just zap your account. They'll delete it immediately.
This generation is growing up with this kind of being the norm. They're used to this. Oh, you got banned? Oh, that's just standard. Oh, because you said something, not even controversial, but challenging some current narrative or something like that, and them getting banned. That's standard procedure for these kids growing up. They're not used to seeing, oh, this is freedom of speech. You're allowed to say this. You should be allowed to say this on platforms. That's where TikTok's actually pretty dangerous when it comes down to that, because a lot of these right wing accounts, conservative accounts, anything like that, they might not be radical or anything like that, but they're saying stuff that the you know, mainstream narrative doesn't like. Leftists are reporting it. The platform's not friendly to conservatives. They get wiped out. So, you know, we can definitely, unfortunately, we're fighting this battle in their ballpark, right? And they make all the rules and everything like that, so we have to be walking on eggshells while they can just say willy-nilly whatever they want. Doesn't matter if it's false or insane or whatever, or even racist. I mean, there was a video that just went viral recently, which I'm sure a lot of people have seen, at least a little part of it, of a Native American just going off on white people, telling them not to have babies, all this stuff. You know, when he was asked how can white allies or whatever it was help him out, and he told him, oh, don't have babies, stuff like that. You reverse that role and a white person saying that, you're banned right away, because that's
racial-based censorship. So white people are censored, I think, more. And then also, it's kind of weird too. Yeah, so it's like weird, because also even with the LGBT community, like, some things are censored more. Like, it's weird, if you're talking about sex, then it is censored. But then if you're talking about, you know, chopping kids' dicks off and trans kids, it's not going to be censored. And so, like, they get selective with their agenda and what they want people to consume. And that's how they censor. It's like, okay, I don't want you to talk about this. I want you to focus on this. It's social engineering through algorithms.
It's absolutely social engineering. And here's a big part about that is it's going in literally the worst direction, because right now, you and I both know that the hot topics where you could get banned, let's say on TikTok, would be, hey, you talk about maybe January 6th. You talk about trans people. You talk about maybe climate change. You talk about obviously COVID. That's probably the biggest one right now. But where's it going to go? It's going to continue to go. The narrative's going to shift. It'll eventually turn to guns. You start talking about how guns save lives, stuff like that, they'll be like, oh, well, you're promoting guns. Guns, you know, go on their own and kill people. They'll ban you because of that. They'll do it for every single topic, political discussion. That's a fiery topic that's happening. You know, that's the most important topic that's happening today. They'll do it for every single topic that we're discussing. They already have four or so, and they'll keep moving on. That's where it's, when I say that we're kind of fighting this battle in their ballpark, TikTok is their ballpark. And I think really the biggest thing we can possibly do is, yes, we can try to play by their rules just to reach people, to get them maybe to your YouTube channel or Blaze or anything like that. And they can actually get out of that ballpark and be in your ballpark, to where you can freely speak, you know, your opinions, your thoughts, whatever it may be. And they can actually listen to those beliefs without interruption of you getting banned or anything like that. But
I'm already going to be getting banned.
For sure.
I got my 11th video removed in the last month and a half since I started doing this.
We need youth getting involved in tech, going to school, actually getting involved in tech, getting involved in these industries, to where we can have our side, or just in general, First Amendment loving people getting involved in tech that can create these next platforms that take out TikTok, that take out Facebook, that take out Instagram. They're the next big thing. And we just need one. We don't have any. We don't have TikTok. We don't have Instagram, Facebook, anything like that. And, you know, all these platforms are ran by people that actually despise you and me and our ideologies and our beliefs and traditional American values. I mean, they really despise it, and that's why they control the whole narrative. Like you said, it's social engineering. We definitely need to be changing that around when it comes to this next generation going after getting involved in tech and being able to have platforms that allow free speech.
Dude, awesome. James, where can people find you?
So on Instagram, at James Klug, K-L-U-G. YouTube's James Klug, K-L-U-G again, and then TikTok and Twitter is Real James Klug.
Dude, James, thank you so much again for coming on. I've never met such a big celebrity on TikTok, so I just a little bit. My nipples got hard. So
we're having fun.
Thank you for coming on.
Thanks.
We got more interviews coming up, but obviously we're here at the conference at America Fest. We're having a great time, and we're sharing sensitive information. We don't know who's going to pick up on it. We're trying to send each other emails on sensitive topics with our guests. So, of course, we're not going to use Gmail. We're not going to use Yahoo, because those email servers can be hacked, your information can be stolen, and most importantly, can be sold to people who hate you, which is why you've got to take your internet security into your hands with StartMail. Now, StartMail offers the most protective way to make sure that other people cannot hack, steal, or sell your data from your email. And the most important thing I like about this, just like Hillary Clinton's email servers that are just gone and we don't know what happened to them, when you actually delete your email at StartMail, it deletes forever. It's absolutely gone. Unlike the other guys where it goes onto some server and they can pull it back up, you need to protect yourself in a time and an age when people are targeting you. Save 50% right now when you sign up at startmail.com/offensive. That's startmail.com/offensive. Again, save 50% with the best internet protection you can for your email and the information that you need. startmail.com/offensive. Sign up today. Congressman Gates, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so let's jump into J6 stuff, okay? I was in the Capitol. I recorded a lot of the videos that were there. I've been involved a lot with the FBI. I've been seeing what's going on, been tracking the cases. I just want to get an update on what's been happening with the political prisoners that are behind the scenes. You've been going out, trying to see them, try to meet them. Do you have any updates for people about the severity and the seriousness of what's happening to those political refugees?
As a consequence of the investigation that Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene led, we have produced a report titled Unusually Cruel that details the deprivations of civil rights, people not having access to counsel, medical care, religious services, and really trying to motivate more Republicans to bring this issue into the forefront, because we should never accept these types of deprivations and departures from the Constitution for any group of Americans. I'm disappointed that more Republicans in Congress aren't gravitating to this as an important thing for us to discuss.
Well, why aren't they? That's the question. Like, why are Republicans not doing this?
Look, they're scared. I was in a leadership meeting just a couple weeks ago, and the pollsters stood up and said, well, most of the country thinks the January 6th committee is partisan, so we should stop talking about it. And I thought to myself, well, why do you think the country believes that? It's because we have shown how illegitimate and partisan this is, and I think it's threat construction. I think the Biden regime wants a basis to pursue MAGA and America First as some sort of terrorist political movement because they fear our effective populism. And so they like maintain these January 6th detainees behind bars as like some sort of shrine to this great threat. The reality is I'm nobody's lawyer. I'm nobody's individual defender. Every case should be decided equally, but the reality is these people are being treated differently than anybody else that would be charged with these types of crimes.
Yeah, and I've heard the conditions are inhumane. I know some of the actual federal probe said that there was inhumane conditions, but not for the January 6th people. It was for the other population. I mean, is this an intentional punishment? Because it feels like it's regime overreach, trying to let people know. I just talked to a gentleman a second ago that is, you know, going to be serving jail time for illegal picketing. And I never even knew what that was before January 6th. And I'm thinking, this guy, he's a disabled vet. He served his country. He's working on his PhD. He's a smart guy.
Illegal picketing is a crime?
Yeah, illegal picketing.
What?
It's because he protested in an unauthorized area. And he's going to serve jail time. He served our country.
How many of the people that were burning this country down in the summer of 2020 are facing illegal picketing charges?
Yeah, nobody.
That's what I want to know. You know, none of those folks had authorization to do what they did, but because their politics was aligned with the left, that just goes in a different category. You want to talk about what Republicans ought to do when we retake the majority? We ought to put together a select committee to investigate the Democrat members of Congress that were funding those riot funds and those bail funds, and maybe they need to be held accountable for the damage they caused this country. The real damage, not the threat construction that we see around January 6th.
Is there any hope? Because I'm going to tell you this honestly, especially with like younger Republicans or younger right-wing people, we don't have any trust in Congress at all. And I'm not disrespecting you, the Congress.
I've worked there and I don't either. I mean, that's why I'm presenting a different vision right now for how Republicans ought to operate in the majority. Paul Ryan had this theory that we should draft up a bunch of bills for Barack Obama to veto, and then that would be our vision for America. But we lost trust because we wouldn't put the same bill to repeal Obamacare on Trump's desk that Obama vetoed 60 times. So I'm through with the performative legislating. Every committee in Congress should be an oversight committee. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris haven't had to face one day of Republican oversight yet. We should change that and we should make it worth it. But you know what? This current crowd, this current thinking among Republicans in Congress won't get us there. That's why I'm here at Turning Point, to try to get activists engaged to demand something different. we should ditch the seniority-based system that says if you got enough gray hair and you laundered enough lobbyist and special interest money, you get to be a committee chairman. You know, you should be the committee chairman, the ones who show up and say, these are the investigations that I will begin to expose the truth to the American people.
So this is what I want to know. I mean, it feels like every time we're taking a step forward, we take two steps back. And I'm talking about, you know, we get people in office like you, we get people like Gosar, like Marjorie. And then what we're seeing now is this systematic censoring of people who could have an influence to represent the populace, which I myself am one of them, and many Americans are. It's like, as populists, as people who want to see this, the corruption overturned, and we look at the very few people in office that might be able to do something, lose all of their power. Can you honestly tell the American people that there is hope to turn this around? Like, would a majority even change the direction with all the Republicans just acting so lame?
We have to, and we have to get the truth out there, because this is a great country and there is nowhere to go should we fail. There's not some distant land we can convert to our purpose. I don't buy the notion that America is an idea. This is our home. We live here and we're not going anywhere else. And so we have to fight to save it. Censuring and the deplatforming of members of Congress, I think is really boomeranged on the Democrats, to be honest with you. I think Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar are two of the most powerful Republicans in Congress now, because they're able to have a wide angle lens and really audit the entire body. If the Democrats had it to do over again, I bet they wouldn't have taken Marjorie off her committees. They would have put her on every one of them just to keep her busy.
If we take it back, and I think we are going to take it back, are we going to start doing the same thing? Are we going to censure them? Are we going to take away their committee assignments? Are we going to take away their power? What kind of game are we going to play?
We should. We should. Whether or not we'll have the guts is something that this election cycle is going to determine. Look, if we have all of the same kind of people, the same kind of objectives, then we're going to end up with a Republican majority that looks more like Mitch McConnell and less like Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I don't want that. So I need the firebrands to win these primaries in open seats. I need people like Liz Cheney to be defeated by their voters. And if those things happen, you know, I think we can really affect the flavor and the thought and the strategy and the tactics of the Republican majority a great deal.
Yeah, so I kind of my last question here, and this is something that weighs heavy on my heart. You know, it feels like after the safest, fairest, and free election in American history with the most popular president in America and watching the decline of our country, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of hope in the institution of voting, genuinely. Like, I know a lot of people feel like, well, even if I vote, I don't know if I can trust my vote. Like, even if we get somebody in there, like I said, they'll be censured. Like, the system, do you believe that the system can be fixed? And if so, how long do you think it will be, like you said, till we can change that flavor?
By the way, I think we can do it very quickly.
Really?
In a lot of ways, you just got to look at the playbook that Eric Holder and Barack Obama ran. Like, when Eric Holder was done being Obama's attorney general, he went out and targeted Secretary of State elections, Attorney General elections, supervisors of elections, and they actually got some of their most talented partisan operatives in those positions. And so I think we actually need to train up a new operative class to actually go sit on that Wayne County, Michigan board, people that are tough enough that will actually say, you know what, maybe the votes cast ought to reconcile the voter rolls and not cave and fade if they're called racists.
Yeah, and so just to wrap it up then, it's like I'm seeing the right shift, right? The younger energy is moving more towards this paleo-conservatism, kind of like what Gosar gives off, this paleo-libertarianism, getting back to our roots, more the idea of conserving tradition, but also realizing that we're in an actual fight. The young people feel like we're in a war. We're in an actual battle. I'm not saying violent war, but definitely a cultural war. And there's a lot of schisms right now in the voting bloc between the older generations that sort of have this idea that the way to go forward is to be like conservatives from 10 years ago. And the younger people are ramped up, they're getting fired up, and they're wanting to see the right return back to its base. What are your thoughts on that?
Zombie Reagan is not coming to save you, right? I mean, I think that for a lot of young people on the right, there's a frustration that they watched like Gen X and even some of the geriatric millennials like me champion this liberty movement, right? Like, we're gonna fight back against the growth of government. And while that fight has raged on for the last 20 years, government has grown larger, more powerful, more capable of squelching out people's liberty. And so now the new right, the younger right, is stepping forward and saying, well, heck, if government's going to grow larger either way, I would like it to do some of the things that would help me in my life, like seal the freaking border, deport the people that are not here legally. And those are visions of government power that depart from neolibertarianism. And you know, I don't know that I fully understand the paleoconservative concept, but certainly the like more populist libertarian vision, where we start with the value premise that government is bad at most things it does, but the things it does do, it ought to do for us to preserve our country and our culture and our language and a way of life that we should never be ashamed of.
Congressman Gates, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I love the blaze.
Friend of the show and a Billboard top charting artist, Chandler Crump, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here, Elijah.
Dude, obviously, let's just jump into it. Your shirt says that you're a vax rebel. What does that mean?
So I made a song called Vax Rebel on my debut album, Dark Winter, which is available in all stores. But the song is mostly about rebelling against mandates. And the thing about these mandates is that they are the most un-American thing I think has ever graced this nation. And we've seen these types of things before in history in other nations, and it has never gone right. And so looking at it in America, you see the way that the Biden administration is coming after the unvaccinated, saying our patience is wearing thin, and the way that you are literally losing your job for not being vaccinated. And that's a whole different separate issue about the vaccine, but we're just talking about the mandates, people losing their jobs, people not being able to go to businesses or go to work simply for not following the mandates and following what the government says. It's not good. So that's why I started a cultural revolution movement called the Vax Rebel Movement, in which we're not like anti-vax or we're not attacking the science or anything behind it, but we're more so attacking the authoritarian nature that is attacking all of our constitutionally and God-given rights.
Well, it's interesting though, because how old are you right now?
I'm 17.
Oh, you're 17. I mean, like a lot of people feel helpless, right? Especially at 17, there's not much you can do. But you found a way around it because you made music. It's like, well,
yeah.
I can't vote,
that's
but I can make music.
So many people have told me in my comments, Chandler, I like what you're doing, but I don't think you should do it. I think you should, you know, step aside and let somebody older than you do it. You can't vote. You're too young. It's not like you can be all across the nation doing all sorts of things like everybody else can. And I say to them, that's exactly why I should be doing this, because everybody has a voice. This is something I said before. Even if you can't vote, for instance, somebody who went to prison and they came back, they still can't vote, right? As a convicted felon, you still have a voice. You can still get out there, door knock. You can still get out there, help other people register to vote. You can still get out there and voice your opinion and perhaps change someone else's mind. And so as a 16 or as a 14, 15, 16, and now 17 year old, I've moved with this mindset that I don't need to vote to change the minds. I don't need to vote to take power. I can change the minds of people, get out there, make music, make culture, make politics, and inspire people to get up and do their own thing. Inspire them to follow what I'm doing, get up there and change other people's minds, get out there and vote. I literally door knocked in Georgia in January simply because I cared so much about it. I mean, I didn't have to do that. It was cold. It was early in the year. I could have been celebrating, but instead of doing that, I was out there door knocking for a cause I believed in, because I knew that no matter what, even if I can't vote, even if I can't do everything an adult can, I can still love this nation, get out there and do what I believe is right.
Yeah, and it's so weird too, because like I think this is where a lot of people ask me how they can, you know, make a difference or make a change. And they begin to say like, oh, I'm going to start a podcast. I'm just going to start a podcast. But they forget that, you know, the war is in the culture. And it's an interesting aspect, because what's, I think, really hot right now and what's showing itself to be true is people who are making music that tells the truth, right? And that's what you're doing. Like, people don't think about it. It's like, well, but my podcast isn't doing well. Bro, this guy's 17 and got chopped, you know, top charted because he wasn't trying to do what other people were doing. He did what he knew he could do. And that was what made the difference. And like, I feel like that's the problem right now, is that people are trying to copy other people, wondering why they're not getting ahead. And what do you think about that? Like, with people like figuring out new ways to reach people with influence.
There's nothing wrong with making a podcast. There's nothing wrong with doing news articles and nothing wrong with making YouTube videos. But what is wrong is getting complacent in what everybody else is doing in the movement. I'm not saying that, oh, well, if you do a podcast and he does a podcast, you're copying them. Just like when I say, oh, I did a song about this, somebody else did a song about this, you could say I'm copying them, but that's not it at all. You just have to make your own. You have to make it your own. And so make your podcast your own. Like, I have a podcast, for example, but it's really just a live stream in which I talk about culture. I talk about the news. I go down the line and jump all over the place, but I'm not stuck in one field of what I'm talking about. I am all over the place, and everybody else needs to understand that you can't lock yourself down. You have to be a person that expands. You know, when I was 14 years old, I didn't think I'd ever chart on Billboard. I didn't think I'd be out here giving speeches. I didn't think I'd be doing any of this. I just started doing YouTube videos, and I met you, and we made that video a long time ago. From then on, I made it my goal to expand and do everything I can for the movement to reach as many people as I can. And eventually I learned that I had even more ways to do it than I thought. So I started giving speeches, and I started writing articles a little bit. Then I started making music, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll just make some, you know, little songs. And eventually it grew all the way to Let's Go Brandon. That is a message and a lesson about how far you can reach the people, that now we have everyone from age kids age 6 to adults 66 that are listening along to our song. They've never listened to rap music before, but they are down with the movement. They are down with the culture, and they're willing to say, let's go, Brandon, right beside Bryson and Tyson and I, and go out there and say, this is our movement. We're going to stand up. We made our voices clear, and we're going to make them even go further. Like, Let's Go Brandon is being played on radio stations. Let's Go Brandon is being played by DJs. Let's Go Brandon is being performed at clubs. This is how big of a movement it has grown to, and it can get even bigger. We can take over more aspects and more scenes. We can take over gaming. We can take over movies. We can take over fashion. We can get everywhere. We just have to do it.
Yeah, and it's interesting, though. I want to talk to you about the Let's Go Brandon thing. Obviously, you made a song. It was great. Do you feel, though, like, from switching from the Fuck Joe Biden to Let's Go Brandon, like, let's be honest, nobody's triggered by Let's Go Brandon. The reason why people use it is because a lot of people don't want to curse. Like, yeah. The right wing is often, you know, symbolized by conservatism and people who... Yeah, and they don't want to curse, right? Do you feel, though, that, like, long-term, that we've lost some sort of effect by not saying the truth of how people feel, that, hey, fuck that guy?
I definitely believe there's some trade-off. I think the FJB movement lost a lot of strength, but I think the LGB movement absorbed all that strength and then got even more strength.
You guys reclaimed the LGB movement without the T.
Yeah, we don't need the T. You could keep that. I've always said LGB. I don't recognize the T's, but hey, that's a different video. I know YouTube does not like me saying that. They've got a lot of T's at their office. No, but either way, it gathered, and this is a story I tell a lot. There's a high school student I know out in Texas, and her school, actually, they performed and actually got the people at their football game together, their student section, and they started chanting, Let's Go Brandon. And you can't chant, you know, FJB at a high school football game, but they started chanting, Let's Go Brandon. It became a real thing, and it became so big that now everybody can say, if you don't curse, kids, students, everywhere you are, you don't want to get suspended for cursing out the president, so why not use a little euphemism for it? It works so well, so I think it's become something even bigger than we could have imagined. It is actually a net positive.
Where can people follow you? Where can they find your music?
You guys can check me out on all streaming services. Just look me up. My name is Chandler Crump, C-R-U-M-P. I'm available on all social medias as well. I'm Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, but I'm also on all alt tech socials like Telegram. Join my Telegram at t.me/realccrump. I like to make a little song out of it. You guys can also just follow me. All those other places, like I mentioned, my album Dark Winter is available as well. So make sure you check that out and stream the song Vax Rebel.
Dude, awesome, bro. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. I'm loving these interviews, loving the switch up. And honestly, if you want to switch up something else in your life that's amazing, you should try Moink Box, which delivers meat and fish products direct to your door. Now, we all saw the meat shortages that happened. Not only the meat shortages, but have you seen how disgusting some of the quality of the meat are at stores? I don't know about you, but I care what I put into my body, and I care that it's not only antibiotic free, but of course that all the animals are treated fairly and that they come from small farms, which is why moinkbox.com/offensive should be your go-to for a meal delivery, give you all of the meats that you need. Now, I love the ribeye personally. I also have the Atlantic salmon. Epic. I've tried so many of their different meats. The bacon is to die for. It actually is absolutely delicious. The ground beef, yes, exactly. But they have pork products, all types of beef products, chicken, whatever you need, even whole chickens. Now, guys, this company is not just cheap meat. Again, when you buy their products, you not only support your health, but you're also supporting small businesses because they buy from these small farms that don't use all these weird GMO and I don't even know what they're putting in things anymore, like bleach and stuff. It's disgusting. Anyway, so go to moinkbox.com/offensives. That's moinkbox.com/offensive right now to get a free year of ground beef. That's kind of cool, actually. That's pretty crazy. A free year of ground beef. So actually take your health into your hands. Support your body. Go to moinkbox.com. That's moinkbox.com/offensive. Get a free year of ground beef. Check it out. George Ventura from Daily Caller, friend of the show. And obviously, you know, I'm glad that you really got dressed up for this event with a nice nice jacket. You know, it's business professional here.
It's casual.
You and I did not finish the assignment. We didn't get it.
No, but look, I'm here, man. We're in the flesh. You're looking good, Elijah. You've been working out.
Been working out. Been getting a lot more attention from people, you know, on the street. You know, like, people are having a difficult time resisting. But obviously with you, you're you.
Thank you, man. No, it's good to be here, bro. We're in Arizona. It's a free state. And, you know, getting ready for that new year, 2022. We got midterms. We're about to ramp it up and be back in the fight.
Dude, all right, so let's talk about this. So you've been at the border. You're still at the border. You got your documentary out. We made the episode about that. give me an update. What's going on at the border? How is the crisis? Is it getting better? Are we seeing improvements or is it getting worse?
Okay, so a couple updates. So the courts actually reinstated, they're forcing the Biden administration to implement the Remain in Mexico policy. The only thing is the Biden administration really isn't, like, they're not following it to the T, and it's at a very minimal. So they're maybe putting 20 to 30 migrants a day in Mexico. So that's nothing compared to the numbers. So right now I've been reporting in Yuma, Arizona. So from Phoenix, it's about 5 hours away. And Yuma's been getting hit really bad. So last week, they had a five-day span where they had 6,000 immigrants cross illegally. It was actually so many that the mayor actually had to declare an emergency. And so we were down there, and you know, I'm speaking to Border Patrol agents, and it's still bad. It's still, they're getting overwhelmed. They don't have enough agents to keep up with everyone. When I speak to some of the agents, what they tell me is like, hey, Jorge, we are no longer even being Border Patrol. What he called it is we're now being Uber drivers for the migrants, because now the migrants, when they cross over illegally, they're not looking to run away from the agents, because they know that if they get caught by an agent, they get taken to a processing center, then they get released into the United States. So a lot of the agents that I speak with, they're like, hey, we're not even doing Border Patrol. He's like, we're literally just Uber drivers for the migrants. So it's pretty overwhelming. The agents are also frustrated. They feel like they don't have no help from the Biden administration, and the numbers are still bad as ever, Elijah. The report just came out for last month. 173,000 illegal immigrants were apprehended. The scary part is that's not even counting what they call the gotaways. So it's those migrants that they're able to detect on the sensors, but they can't apprehend them because they don't have enough manpower.
Is that what a gotaway is? I was retarded, and I was watching, I was reading a story, and I was like, gotaway. I thought I was reading it wrong. So that's what that means.
Gotaway, yeah.
It's not getaway, but it's gotaway.
Gotaway, yeah. Okay. So basically, the Border Patrol was able to detect them on some type of sensor camera, but they didn't have the manpower to apprehend them, which is really, those are migrants that you actually were really worried about, because the most likely, the reason that they're gotaways is either they're bringing drugs into the country, they're smuggling migrants, or they've probably already been deported in the past and have a criminal history in the United States. So those are the folks that we should have a you know, red flag on, because it's like, yeah, we have no information on them, and now they're in the country and we don't know who these people are.
Yeah, it is weird though, because the border crisis, like, I don't understand what's going on. So I think you saw this with Abbott. Abbott actually offered to pay the Biden administration to buy all of the unused steel. Yep. That the taxpayers already paid for, that's just being left to rot. That's how bad the situation is. We're so desperate that it's like, we will literally double pay for the steel. I mean, is that the desperation down there? Is that how, like, because you're there, right? We see it, it's bad, it doesn't look good, but I'm not there. I don't know, like, the feelings on the ground. What does it feel like on the ground? What is the mood? What's the perspective for the future?
So the feeling right now on the ground, Elijah, is morale is just low for the agents, because they feel like they have no help and they're completely overwhelmed. The thing is, what people forget too, it's not just the agents that are on the border, but also local law enforcement. So then the people in the community lose out. Right now in Yuma, they have to constantly take migrants to the hospital because all these pregnant Haitian women are coming over. So all the resources and our American taxpayer money is getting used.
Haitians. So, what are they doing?
So morale is low. It's only getting worse. They're completely frustrated and they have no help. I don't know if you remember too, Elijah, when those 15,000 Haitians came under the bridge in Texas, and then those fake photos of supposedly agents whipping the migrants, that right there also hit a new low for agents, because the Biden administration then attacked Border Patrol and they said they're going to run an investigation. To this day, we're still waiting for that investigation to conclude, because they know it's not true. But it just seems like we're losing this battle, and I mean, to this day, I don't understand why there's no urgency from the Biden administration to get a handle on this.
Well, I know it makes you wonder though if it is intentional, like, because, you know, like, do you believe in the Great Replacement theory? Do you think that's a white supremacist, you know, conspiracy, or do you believe that's real, that there's an intentional push for a demographic shift?
I think so, and not only for votes, and then people forget, when we have all these influx of immigrants, it actually hurts American workers and wages. So wages still get suppressed. So that's why I don't understand what the Biden administration is doing, because even their own voters, you know, you're hurting your own voters doing this. First of all, with the wages, also all the fentanyl that's coming into the country. Washington Street Journal just put out a great report. The past 12 months, over 100,000 Americans have been died due to an overdose connected to fentanyl. The fentanyl is not coming from Canada. It's coming from Mexico. So everything is hurting them. So we'll see, you know, how it looks. I think Democrats will lose in 2022, especially with the border issue becoming one of those top areas of concern, especially in a state like this in Arizona. Arizona is their top issue for voters is the border, whether the Democratic voters or Republican voters.
Yeah, because it's like, people don't understand what the illegals do. That's why everyone's like, well, you're Mexican. I've heard this. Like, why wouldn't you want more Mexicans over here? And it's like, well, number one, you're not Mexican. You're American.
Right.
You change your nationality. Ethnicity, no. I mean, you still trace your lineage back. But it's like, no, I'm an American now, and I don't want people coming to this country when we're already having the problems that we're having. We have so many issues. And like that's what I'm trying to say about the replacement is it's like, if it is intentional, because even if it's not like they're making them come, which they are, but it's also like the policies they're making specifically are encouraging people to enter the United States. Do you have, does the Border Patrol, does anybody on the ground have any idea like why they're doing this, right? Because it's obviously different than Trump. Why do they want this?
Well, like I said, it's one of those questions where it's like we're still asking like, wait, is it, you know, why is there no kind of urgency to fix it? And what's interesting too, Elijah, is if them not solving the border issue, like you're saying, like for like even Latinos that live in America, they want a strong border. In 2016, all those counties in Texas that right on the border, they're every single county population over 80% Latino. So in 2016, when Clinton and Trump had their election, all those counties went overwhelmingly to Hillary Clinton. Fast forward to 2020, all those counties, all his Latino, went to Trump. Why? Off the border. So whether you're Black, Latino, doesn't matter. We all want a strong border, and it protects American wages. Black men overwhelmingly want a strong border. They might not say it in the public, but it protects their wages. So we're still asking that question, and I don't understand it. Especially like there's, you know, if you're an American, you think that what's happening at the border is not coming to your town. It's not true. There's criminals coming in. The fentanyl that's coming in. Bill Malusian just did a great report last week where there was a 17-year-old that was smuggling migrants, and he crashed into a mother and daughter and killed them trying to evade police. So this is the type of stories that are happening every day. So we need, especially in 2022, put some pressure also on the GOP Republican Party that we want an American first movement and to come in and protect American workers first.
And then, so you recently ran to some people who offered to give you a young girl. What happened there?
So basically, Elijah, I was in Yuma. We're documenting, and we're in this area that's called literally the gap, where there's a gap of border wall, and this huge influx of South Americans came in. And then in that group, there was these five males, Mexican nationals from Mexico. And what I noticed from them is they actually were not looking to be apprehended by Border Patrol. So when I started to talk to them, they were like, hey, they were trying to get me to drive them into Yuma. They're like, hey, man, take us into Yuma. He's like, we'll pay you 500 cash. Give you 600. I'm like, no, it's okay. And he's like, come on, man. He's like, we could even give you a little girl, young as 9 years old. And right there, I was like, whoa. And then finally, Border Patrol arrived, and then the men got scared and they actually went back into Mexico. That's why I was able to grab the video of them going back. But the situation is serious, Elijah. You know, people, you know, that's one thing that never gets highlighted is the sex trafficking, the human trafficking. The Democratic Party always wants to be the party of Black and brown people. Well, who do you think is getting sex trafficking stuff? It's Black and brown migrants. So hopefully, you know, we get a solve on this issue. So we need the Republican Party to come out hard in 2022 and put some pressure on the Democratic Party and get us solved to this crisis.
George, where can people follow you?
So best parts right now is on Instagram, Jorge Ventura TV. But on Twitter is where we're breaking the news in real time at Ventura Report. We just put out a great documentary kind of going talking about Mexican cartels in California. You can check that out at carteldoc.com. That's just carteldoc.com.
George, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much, Elijah.
Well, obviously, America Fest has been amazing. That was only part one of the interviews. We have some amazing guests coming up on the next episode, part two. And, you know, I thank you guys so much again for watching this. If you guys like this, let us know below. Don't forget that this is an audio-only podcast as well. You can download it on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, wherever you listen to things, your carrier pigeon, I don't know. But if you can leave a 5-star review, it's free. It doesn't cost you anything. And literally, I don't ask for anything. It just leave a review. Don't be a loser. I never have read a 1-star review in a while, but I just want to read this one to you guys too. I only read 5-star reviews, but this one's good. Trump would be disappointed is the title of it. So Trump's not happy with me, apparently. Elijah is a rhino. Don't be fooled by his act. He's as lib as they get. He plays the victim and whines about how unfair life is. Do your research. See him for him for what he truly is. Sad. Hashtag sad. Pretty amazing stuff. But hey, Trump's disappointed in me. We also have a 5-star review from Can't Stop Laughing. Francis Simmerman says, I started listening after hearing Elijah on Ali Stuckey's Relatable podcast, and I love the takes from a degenerate Christian perspective. I love that phrase. You guys are so good. I'm calling myself an Australian Christian from here on out, okay? It's like an African-American, but for Christianity. Definitely my kind of people. I find myself laughing and yet finish listening with a sense of emptiness. This is so sad, but I'm sure I will continue to consume your content. I'll become whole in the end. Please add I rebuke you in the name of Jesus merch to your shop. Keep fighting the good fight, and let's be friends @_Francis_Miller. God bless the USA. Amen. Anyways, guys, don't forget also too, you can support the show at blazetv.com/Elijah to get $10 off, become an official SOB, and join the Telegram chat, which is absolutely free. Have a great rest of the week, and may God bless the United States of America. I'll see you for part two. I'm signing out.